So we are on the phone with Paul Soracki, who is a wildlands and wildlife activist and a GIS researcher who works with several groups from the North Idaho area. How are you today, Paul?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. And you?
Not too bad. Thanks for joining us today. Could you explain a little bit of your background?
Yeah, I'm a past employee of the Forest Service, and I have a BS in zoology and a master's in geospatial analyst. And my master's degree was studying the effects of climate change on the old growth forests of the inland Northwest.
Wow.
I've recently worked with Mike Bader, and we published a peer-reviewed paper on grizzly bear denning from its denning habitat from Glacier Park to the Salmon River to Eastern Washington, and that is all mapped and analyzed now for use by anybody. I know we're talking about this intense string of timber sales that extends for 45 miles from the Clark Fork River down the east side of Ponderay Lake and south to the east side of Hayden Lake. And this area encompasses over 1 million acres of habitat for wildlife and water quality that is going to be disturbed. The Chloride Gold Project, which is the focus of this talk, it's in the center. It's located on the southeast corner of Ponderay Lake, and this project that the Forest Service has been working on proposes to log off 12 point square miles of forest habitat with shelterwood and sea tree clear cuts. We call them clear cuts because the Forest Service wants to call them shelterwood and seed trees, but at first they have trees on them after the initial logging, even though if there's a lot fewer. But after a while, they remove the seed trees from the site, and they remove the shelterwood trees from the site. So they're leaving these large openings with just a few widely scattered trees and a few snags for wildlife. They are also building 23.8 miles of new roads in this area. And the Forest Service claims they are going to store them after a 10 to 15 year long timber sale. But it will take years for trees to grow back on these roads and not fragment and restore the habitat fragmentation that was taking place by the construction of the roads.
Right. And so I've noticed in that area too, there's also a lot of off-road use, dirt bikes and four-wheelers and such. And I would imagine these new roads that they're building for this timber sale are going to encourage some more of that in those kind of invasions through wildlife habitat and former timber stands. Is that right?
That's correct. And we do not know the status of even the gates in the area, if the gates are effective or not. And that requires people to go out in the field and take a look and map the gates and see if there are ATVs driving around the gates or dirt bikes or not. So in addition to that we need to look at the winter activities. In the winter, there is an overlapping project with Chloride Gold called the Kinnexu Winter Rec EA, which is going to let people know where they can snowmobile or snow bike off trails. So when there's snowmobiling and snow biking off trails, it has serious implications to wildlife, like going over grizzly bear denning habitat and disturbing denning bears, like mowing down whitebark pine, which have just been listed as a threatened species. And when a snowmobiler or anybody harms a white bark pine, they are breaking the law, and it is called a taking. So all these overlaps with summer rec and winter rec are in addition to all the timber sales. And when you combine all these timber sales into the big area with the overlapping winter rec EA, it's called stacking NEPA documents, and it is not legal. So we are asking that an environmental impact statement be prepared for the chloride gold project because of that reason and a lot more that I'm going to be talking about.
Yeah, there's numerous impacts. And of course, the Buckskin Saddle purportedly restoration project is just north of the chloride gold on the east side of Lake Pendere. And it also did not receive a full EIS study, as should have been done, considering all the impacts on wildlife and wild areas. Is that right?
That is correct. And we are hoping that the Forest Service listens to us, and does a complete EIS for the chloride gold project. And another, I'll go through some issues here that are really important for the project and for the people who live in the area, and because it's our national forest, for everybody in the country. The first one is the designation of the wildland urban interface called the WUI. This area is a special area that has emphasis for protecting residences from fire. But Bonner County was directed to delineate this wildland urban interface, and the delineation lacks any scientific validity, and because boundaries extend far up drainages, like up to the ridge up Gold Creek, which is really far away from any community, and they're cut off in areas nearer communities that do not provide good locations for fire breaks like they are supposed to have done. For the Forest Service to use this has legal questionability, and it's called arbitrary and capricious under the Administrative Procedures Act. This is being contended legally with the designation of WUIs has become being contended legally under contention with the Hannett Flats timber sale near Priest Lake.
So I'd like to ask, is this usual for smaller governments like counties to designate wildlands urban interfaces or WUIs?
Yes, that is the process. The counties in the Northwest were supposed to designate these, and then the Forest Service was supposed to adapt them, but the counties the Forest Service just adapted them, and they do not meet the standards in the WUI guidelines for delineating the interface. So that's where the controversy lies.
Mostly because some of these forests are so far from communities that you really couldn't call them an urban interface, and it's just an excuse to log some more forests, right?
Absolutely. And this paradigm needs to be replaced by structure ignition zone ideas defined by fire scientists like Dr. Jack Cohn, where the most important thing people can do for their houses and structures is to protect the area around them. If you protecting areas farther away does not make a difference.
And that seems to be one of the main reasons behind these purported restoration projects and timber sales on the east side of Lake Pend'Oreille is that the governments at all levels like to scare the few nearby residents into thinking that, you know, they're going to lose their land and their property to wildfire since there's been an increase of it. And the Forest Service is here to save the day and log the area off so everything doesn't burn down. That seems to be the main motivation behind these timber sales.
Yeah, and the dark underbelly of this is they increase the size of the wildland urban interface in order to extract more timber from our landscape.
Wow. So I was surprised to learn that there are some pretty significant roadless areas mixed in with this timber sale. Tell us some more about that.
Yeah, roadless areas are called IRAs, and there's the McGee roadless area and the Pack Saddle roadless area. There on the hill, the crest of the hills on the east side of Pend'Oreille Lake, just way up. And they have areas attached to them that have not been mapped, that have not been entered, entering meaning logged and roaded, or they've been logged and roaded in the past, and they are healing now. And these areas adjacent to the roadless areas are called roadless expanses. And the Forest Service is required by law to analyze the effect of logging in these roadless expanses, and its effects to the roadless areas. So we are also asking that these roadless expanses be evaluated, and areas that meet the criteria be added to the two IRAs, which contain important elk habitat and elk security. They contain grizzly bear habitat other big game in addition to elk. So, and the recreation value for roadless areas is very high for people who like to hike the trails, and even for people who like to use motorized recreation on the trails through the roadless areas, which unfortunately are allowed in these areas.
So in roadless areas, from what I recall from the roadless rule back several decades ago, although I understand that in Idaho it now falls under a state roadless rule, aren't wilderness characteristics supposed to be maintained in those places in case there's ever the designation of wilderness placed on inventory roadless areas or IRAs?
Yes, the wilderness characteristics are supposed to be maintained. And what is happening is that for the chloride gold timber sale, they are going to go and they are going to pre-commercially thin areas in the roadless area itself and underburn in it. And they are stating pre-commercial thin, for those who don't know it, is taking out the real trees and thinning out the trees when they're really young before they have any commercial value. And they are going to do this commercial thinning for who knows what reason. And they're going to say that because the stumps created by the commercial thinning will decay over time, that they will not affect the roadless or the potential to become a wilderness. And the Forest Service has changed their tune here, because they used to say that logging or thinning in roadless areas will affect the wilderness characteristics. So it's a change of tune, and it's a very serious change of tune about that.
Well, certainly for recreationists, any place you're walking through that has stumps, I think anyone would not call that place a wilderness, but yeah, so it impacts recreation values as well. Well,
Right.
besides the few folks who wander into the wilder areas on the east side of Lake Pend'Oreille, there are some permanent residents there, and all of this logging is really going to tear up their world. Tell us some more about impacts on wildlife from these logging sales.
Okay, I'm going to discuss a few species of wildlife here. One is the fisher. The fisher is a small is a it's a larger weasel. And there are no rec, which is a sensitive species, on the Idaho Panhandle. Fishers are really sensitive to logging operations, and as little as 5% in an area gets logged, it will reduce their potential to utilize that area for their home range. And obviously, just for those of you who have seen the map, the 12.5 square miles of forest habitat are being logged. They're going to destroy any hope to have fishers in this area in the future. And then there's the for grizzly bears, this the chloride gold areas function as a corridor between the Selkirk Cabinet Yak grizzly bear ecosystem and the Bitterroot grizzly bear ecosystem. And it's in the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service bears may be present zone. So they know that grizzly bears have been recorded in this area. From the modeling work that Mike Bader and myself have done, that there is excellent denning habitat on Packsaddle Mountain. Which is in the Packsaddle IRA, and it's in the analysis area, the project area for chloride gold. This area is crossed by ATV trails, which happen to be legal in this roadless area. So, and it's open to snowmobiling. So, if a bear dens in that area, one, the bear's looking for a den site earlier in the fall, will encounter activities from dirt bikes and ATVs, and then later in the year, if in the chance that they do find a good secure denning site, they will be disturbed by ATVs, by snowmobiles going over their or near their denning site, and it's been documented that if a snowmobile goes within 100 yards of a grizzly bear den, that the bear responds. Bear can hear it because they're not, and it will cause stress for the bear. So, these roadless areas are extremely important for our grizzly bears. Now, next, I'm going to flip over to the flammulated owl. Flammulated owl is a small, migratory owl, and it comes up to the Panhandle in early May. And the Forest Service has found a flammulated owl habitat, an active flammulated owl territory, or several of them in the project area. They like dry, mature to old growth stands to nest in. Now, the Forest Service claims they want to improve flammulated owl habitat. They plan to do underburning in the stands that the owls are going to nest in the spring. But if there's an underburn in the spring, it may be they may be burning up the potential for the site to produce insect foods for that season. So even and they may burn up active nest snags. So even if there are some snags left that don't get burned during the underburn, the owls there may not have sufficient food to raise young. There's not much research on this, but we should not proceed with spring underburning without any knowledge of the effects to it. Other areas have identified the nesting snags that the owls used and protected the areas around the nesting sac, buffered them.
So they're going to be logging off a lot of forests in this area. I don't know really what percentage would be altered of the entire area, which is, as you said earlier, 12.5 square miles of forests. But quite a bit of those forests are old growth, and of course, old growth provides the greatest potential for storing carbon and thus reducing the impacts of climate change from greenhouse gases, including carbon dioxide and other gases like methane. How are these timber sales, especially the chloride gold, but also the nearby Buckskin Saddle on the east side of the lake, going to impact old growth?
They are not impacting old logging, the few stands of old growth that are left in the area. But what the Forest Service is not doing is designating old growth recruitment stands in mature timber to grow into old growth in the future. This is really bad because both mature and old growth stands provide carbon storage. They also have less evapotranspiration than the younger stands. The Forest Service through all these large openings is going to produce stands of rapidly growing trees. And when the rapidly growing trees get to be past pole stage in a few years, they are going to rapidly, the amount of evapotranspiration from these trees is going to rapidly increase, and it's going to suck the water out of the soil, and it can impact the streams because there's so much of the water and the landscape is going into tree growth, and less is available for groundwater replenishment of the streams. So, yes, it's a combination. It's much better to leave these stands alone for the climate, for carbon storage.
And it seems like opening up these forests too is going to dry out the land on top of the additional evapotranspiration, and just cause more wildfires, not less.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And then let's, as long as we're talking about watersheds, there are two watersheds that are really of high concern. There's actually more than that, but I'll just deal with two. One is Gold Creek upstream from West Gold Creek on the south portion of the Chloride Gold Project area. And the Forest Service wants to cut 37.5% of that area, of that drainage, and they want to log it off. That is going to open up the area to be susceptible for rain on snow events, which are going to destabilize the stream, and it will, like I just said before, it will eliminate the option for fisher habitat, because there's no way a fisher can survive with such so many openings in the area. And the second area is the Declaration Creek drainage. Both of these are also drain into critical streams that are critical bull trout habitat. But Declaration Creek is going to have 33% of its drainage logged off. And the only reason they didn't enter more units is because a large part of the Declaration Creek watershed is in the McGee roadless area, and they're staying out of that. But logging a third of the drainage off within 10 years could be potentially devastating to those two streams and to the portions of the stream downstream from them. A Declaration Creek flows into the North Fork of the Coeur d'Alene River, which is critical bull trout habitat and a prime Westlow trout fishery, and it's going to change the hydrology of that stream. And it needs, we're asking the Forest Service to look at that. We're asking them to stay out of these areas to begin with, but we doubt very much that they will. So we'll have to address that later.
It seems like overall, with the removal of these forests, that there would be less protection of the snow that provides a large majority of the water for our watersheds throughout the interior Northwest. In fact, it seems snow is the main contributor of moisture to this entire Northern Rockies ecosystem. So not just for the residents living in these creeks, but it seems that these logging sales will reduce the amount of water in rivers and lakes, if not impact the water quality of those water bodies as well.
Exactly. Both Declaration Creek and Gold Creek and the shoreline of Ponderay Lake are listed with IDEQ TMDLs for the streams are for temperature, and I'm not sure what the lake is for. But all this cutting and subsequent burning is going to release nutrients into the stream. The nutrients are going to flow into the nearshore waters of Lake Ponderay and possibly cause, in addition to the human pollution from homes, that they may cause additional algae blooms.
Wow. So some of these waters are already listed as having problems with pollution then?
Yes, by Idaho Department of Environmental Quality.
Huh.
And we need to think of, too, that as climate change continues to occur, there are going to be more and more rain events at higher elevations during the winter time. And the rain may, it's hard to predict the amount of precipitation in these areas in the future, but if the precipitation increases, it's going to be as rain, and it's going to further stress these streams without trees being the buffer for water flow into the streams during the winter.
So there could be a lot of muddy runoff in the wintertime, and then when summer comes around, no snow left to feed the various water bodies in the region, thanks to all this logging.
Right, and then the trees that they plant are going to be growing very fast and evaporate, and like we discussed, transpiring a lot more than mature and old growth trees. So they are going to add additional stress to the stream by sucking more water out that would go to a stream if 30-35% of the area was designated as old growth recruitment stands, and that they just left these stands alone.
So I understand they're also going to experiment with a sensitive species. That seems unreal that they would experiment with a species that's already of concern to various agencies. What's going on with the clustered lady slipper?
The clustered lady slipper is a rare lady slipper that occurs in various little colonies throughout Montana and Idaho. And the Forest Service wants to experiment on these small populations of the species that occur in the chloride gold project area. They want to do some logging over lady slipper habitat, and they want to do some areas that are underburning. The Forest Service, in their scoping notice, did not even present how this was to be accomplished, what they were going to, the study design, or who would be involved with this. But a lot of I've done some research on clustered lady slippers, and most of the researchers say that logging is not warranted over clustered lady slipper habitat. There are colonies. Occasionally, there are some colonies that are on dry sites that respond to some underburning. But in general, moist sites, the number of lady slippers and moist sites that we have here on chloride gold are smaller. So we're concerned that they are going to do these experiments over these populations, and then because of abrupt climate change, evapotranspiration will increase. The forests will be open up. There will be additional heat on these orchids. There will be possible impacts on. They'll probably be careful from logging machinery, but what they didn't consider is that opening up these stands might encourage trampling from big game moving through, because it's going to be easier to travel through these stands that have shrubs in the understory, and there's an increased desiccation of the stand due to heat and the wind flowing through the stand that's more open, might have detrimental effects. So, well, we are not supportive of any experimenting on this in the light of climate change.
So, the concern this week, of course, is that the scoping period is open and really briefly. It seems like it should be extended due to some information that the Forest Service is withholding. But the scoping period has been open since the middle of December, right through the holidays when nobody was really paying attention for a couple weeks. And it closes on Monday, January 16th. So we're hoping that folks can share their comments with the Forest Service and the Idaho Panhandle National Forest. Tell us some more about how the sale might impact climate change and how people can get involved in commenting. And the scoping periods, of course, are for telling the Forest Service what they should study. With an EA, and of course, folks should also be asking for a full environmental impact statement instead of just an environmental assessment. But yeah, tell us a little bit about all that and how people can get involved.
So we're really concerned that this overlogging of the area is going to impact our climate, because it's removing trees that store carbon and trees that fix carbon and retain it. The Forest Service counters that it's going to burn up anyway, and there's insects and disease, and everything's a complete disaster in order to push these EAs through. But what's really concerning is the Forest Service has been putting out scoping notices, like for this sale and in the past for Buckskin Saddle, but without any background information. The Forest Service already has all the units laid out. They have the proposed roads laid out, and they put out a scoping letter that has no information that the people can grasp and comment on without having to do a Freedom of Information request for the background information. And the Forest Service also has gotten together with the logging collaboratives, like Panhandle Forest Collaborative, and they have made this alternative and approved it before it is even scoped to the general public. That it's like these people have special privileges, which they do not. The Forest Service is supposed to take everybody's comments equally, and they are not doing it that way. So what people can do is to either email the Forest Service to do this with comments on this. To do this, they can either visit the Idaho Panhandle Forest Service SOPA site. You can just type in IPNF SOPA, and it'll show up. And then you scroll down to chloride gold, and then you can open up the link to Chloride Gold, and up there they have a place where you can submit short comments, either type them in directly, or you can upload an email or a document to that site, and then these comments will be displayed with all everybody else's comments on this sale. So it's really important to fight these sales because of the effects of climate, because of the effects of fishers, because of they're not designating old growth recruitment stands, and because of the effects of removing mature timber in 20, fifth, how many was that? 15?
12 and a
I
half
swear.
square miles.
Yeah, 12 and a half square miles of mature timber from the site is going to have a negative impact to our environment and to our carbon budget.
I'm just really astounded that the Forest Service expects comments on a huge timber sale, one of the largest that the North Idaho Panhandle has seen in a long time, without providing any information to the public. You would think that would prompt not only a comment period extension, but also, of course, better analysis shared with the public through a full environmental impact statement.
I would hope so, but the Forest Service wants to push these projects through without having to deal with publics who might have a different idea than the Forest Service and the logging collaboratives. And it's a sad state of affairs.
And so I guess the Forest Service thinks that the concerns of the conservation community are addressed by having a few groups represented on these, I guess it's every other month, collaborative meetings. And we've also noticed in the local Sandpoint Reader that there has been a series of articles starting a year ago. I think there's been about 4 to 6 articles about how, yay, the confrontations between environmentalists and the timber industry and the U.S. Forest Service have been reduced by these kumbaya collaborative meetings where the conservationists just seem to nod and agree with everything the agencies are doing. And that doesn't seem to be the case. Not everyone and all of our concerns are represented by the few groups who are part of these collaboratives, and that's really a concern that it impacts the process of these timber sales, that people don't really get a say because supposedly they're represented by these few sellout groups that go along with these collaboratives.
Yeah, exactly. And there are a lot of people who are opposed to this and to a lot of the things that the Forest Service is doing, but the Forest Service ignores statements by other environmental groups, and they just fall back on the yes stamping of the collaboratives with pseudo green environmental groups cheerleading the logging and logging and timber industry on to log more and log more and road more, and it's all to the disadvantage and does not benefit our environment.
And certainly not the creatures that also call those forests home, when those places get so torn apart.
It hurts me terrible to see what's going on our landscape.
So again, people can just search through any search engine for IIN, or let's see, IPNF, which is short for Idaho Panhandle National Forest, and then also type in SOPA, that's short for.
I don't know.
Okay, it's SOPA.
Yeah,
So
that's right.
type in IPNF SOPA. And then when you arrive at that Forest Service page, you can scroll down and find the chloride gold timber sale
Right, and then you can submit comments there.
by Monday, December 16th. And
Yes.
Wild Idaho Rising Tide also hopes to compile some information and sign on to comments that Paul Soraki, who we've been talking with, is very vigilantly writing tens and tens of pages worth of comments against this timber sale. And you can find information that will be posted there soon as well. And we really want to thank you for joining us here on the Climate Justice Forum, Paul, and for all your work investigating these heinous timber sales that are happening in North Idaho.
Anything I can do to help is good.
All right. Thank you, Paul.